Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefery, and this is episode number 226. Thank you guys for listening each week. Really appreciate those of you that like, share, comment. Just helps me highlight great coaches doing great things, and really appreciate all the support for that. I also want to thank our sponsors, and specifically Iron Grip for sponsoring this episode. Iron Grip is in my garage. It's a company that I've put in every single weight room that I've been a part of and just think the world of. And if you're in the market for plates and dumbbells and bars, it's you can't go wrong. This week I'm joined by Dave Reynolds, a good friend, fellow Tennessean, and he was the head strength coach at Baylor School down in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and just a fantastic person, and we've become pretty good friends through the years and doing big things down there. Appreciate you coming on the show, man.
Thank you for having me. You're a good guy to put up with a guy like me.
Come on now. Well, hey, man, you know, I usually ask the question, kind of, you know, the journey question and things like that. But, I mean, you were at UT Chattanooga. You stayed put. You went to the Baylor School. You know, you've been there for how many years now?
15 years.
Yeah, 15 years. I mean, you had the opportunity to go a lot of different directions. You could have gone college, could have gone pro. You could have bounced a lot of places. You chose 15 years ago to go to the high school level when that wasn't probably the popular choice, you know?
Right.
Why high school strength and conditioning?
One, for me, it was getting my kids a good education.
Yeah.
I was able to come to this school because being a day in boarding school, a private school, it's pretty expensive. And on an assistant's salary at a college in Chattanooga, I wouldn't have been able to send them here had I not come to this school.
Yeah.
And I had every intention of just staying until they got out of school and then trying to go somewhere else. But the community here is absolutely incredible. The coaching staff that I work with and all the staffs that I work with are just all incredible people. And it just turned into, I'll just stay here until they don't want me anymore.
That day hasn't come yet, huh?
Not yet, thank God.
No, that's all. I mean, I know you do a great job down there. Had many, many great athletes come through that program and producing some great coaches. We just hired one of your former coaches not too long ago and super
yep.
excited about that. But you've had an opportunity to make lots of impacts. I want to dig into that quite a bit. But before we okay. do, 15 years being there, you've made lots of mistakes, you know, through the years. What's been maybe the biggest mistake you've made and kind of how you learned from it?
The biggest mistake I made was when I came from college to here. Not in the job move, but dealing with the kids.
Yeah.
Because the kids here are really smart kids, and you forget that they're high school kids.
Yeah, right.
Think you're talking to a college kid, then you have to realize, wait a minute, this kid's in ninth grade, but he's 6'4", 300 pounds,
yeah.
And stuff. And so that, for me, that was the hardest, move to realize. And, sometimes in college, you can get on to those kids a little bit different, a little bit harsher. And it took me a couple of months to kind of tone that down a little bit. You know, if I saw a kid not doing what he's supposed to do, I would immediately revert back to what I did 6 years in college. And I'd get on them pretty quick. And then, you have to realize, some of these kids they've never been in a program quite like what we put them through. Mm-hmm. And so I had to, that was a big learning curve for me.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point because oftentimes, we get these kids and they're the baby giants, right? They're the freaking 6'6", 300-pound kid and they look
right.
like they're freaking grown, and we want to treat them a certain way. But there's also the opposite side of that equation where that Baylor's a really good academic school. It's a boarding school. I mean, you've got some really smart kids and all of a sudden you got some really, really smart book knowledge kids.
Right.
That haven't walked down the life journey process yet,
Exactly.
And so I think that's something that as coaches we always have to kind of keep in mind, even at the college level and even at the professional level, where these guys,
right.
They've been in this bubble.
Right. And it's what was kind of culture shock to me was, you know, when you have kids showing up in the morning to work out, and I've got a 16-year-old kid and a AM group, and he pulls out a Maserati. You know, that kind of blew my mind a little bit too, because I'm just watching kids just walk in from a campus, you know, dorm or whatever, and then it was a culture shock at first. And then, but you know, we persevered and we made it through it.
Well, you know, again, and they, again, I mean, kids that have means and resources, they have their own sets of problems too. You know,
that's exactly right.
You know,
most of them just need a pat on the back and a hug.
Yeah. You know, yeah. That's, again, we as strength coaches, we have a big role to kind of fill gaps, and sometimes that's the family gap, sometimes that's the athletic gap, sometimes that's, you know, academic gap, and right. You know, that's, I think that's why most of us got into the profession, is to try to make an impact whatever way we can. And
that's right.
For the most part, we've got that, you know, that athletic kind of backing, but that gives us the platform
right.
to have those other conversations.
Right. And that's the cool thing about it, is I'm with these kids more than anybody. And so you become another father figure or an uncle or a brother or, you know, or whatever. And sometimes it's what they need.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, even though you're at a private school that's got resources and things like that, I mean, there's lots of private schools and there's lots of schools with resources, but they all don't put them to the weight room, you know,
right.
And you've been able to build, I mean, I don't know if you can hold your phone up, but look in the background of your weight room there. It's a pretty impressive weight room for a high school anywhere, you know, it's a pretty impressive weight room for a college.
Yes, sir.
Places. How are you able, when you got there 15 years ago, it didn't look like that. I mean, how were you able to gain support both financially for facility, but also then to turn around and create a curriculum and a class schedule that allows you to train those athletes kind of through the day?
It took me 6 years to do it.
Yeah.
We went from 3,000 square feet to 22,000 square feet, and we were having to lift in shifts in the old weight room. And I'm not going to lie, when we left out of the old weight room, I kind of got a tear in my eye because we'd done a lot of work in there.
Yeah, sure.
But we opened this facility in 2010, in October of 2010, and we were on a really big run. And what was so amazing was we put field turf down at our stadium the year before, and my head football coach came to me and goes, "We're going to have to wait a year on your weight room." And I was like, "Okay, whatever. I've waited six. I can wait another year. It's all right." And stuff. And so we were in a losing streak to our rivals across the river, Macaulay School. And we had raised everything but about $500,000. We broke the streak against Macaulay, and on Monday I had my $500,000. And so I got to go ahead and start building a facility.
Right.
But the facility was already here, and it used to be an indoor tennis court.
Yeah.
And we'd gotten put out of the playoffs, and I was standing here looking at it like the year before we built it, and it's about 2 o'clock in the morning, and I was just looking inside, and it was dark, and our head coach, Coach Massey, came up behind me, and he said, "Coach Reynolds, you okay?" And I was like, "I'm looking at my new weight room." And he goes, "If you want that for a weight room, we'll get started on it Monday." And we were fortunate enough, the guy that had built this gave the building to us and gave us our first $1 million on it.
Wow.
And so then we just had to raise $1 million, and that was what transpired. You know, we had it all raised at $500,000, and we break the streak, and then we had it.
Right.
And putting it all together, it was pretty neat. Both of my assistants were very instrumental in what we're doing here and what we were putting in it. And you know, I let them have a lot of input, just as much as I did. And you know, just I wanted it to be something that we all built together. And the culture here, when I first got here, it was kind of, it took me a while to change the culture to get to where, you know, we could, you know, lifting was a part of every day of our athletes.
Right.
And then one of my assistants, Julian Kaufman, who he also coaches our defensive backs, you know, he's 100 miles an hour wide open, and he's Italian. And so he was out doing it. And then, I've got my, I call him my pit bull or my mini-me. His name's Bryce Johnson. He's my other assistant. And he is he's 200 miles an hour wide open. So that really helped, you know,
yeah.
getting the culture going and stuff. And so then we weren't able to have, like, lifting classes during the day just because the academic schedule is so, I mean, it's ground and pound.
Right.
So we were having to lift people after school. And I was running probably 300 to 350 kids a day through the old weight room, which was 3,000 square feet,
right?
You know, from 3:30 to 6:30 at night.
Right.
And then when we moved over here, it was able, we were able to, you know, we can work out 80 kids at one time, which sometimes gives us, we can work out four teams at one time with the racks and the platforms and setup. But this year they've allowed us to start, you know, lifting our athletes during the day. And so at 8 o'clock this morning, we ran 94 athletes through, and at 10:40, we just ran another 60 through. Yeah. So we've got one more class today where there's 92 kids in this class. So it'll be a, because of part of the day, it's a pass-fail class. They have to attend at least 85% of it, but it's also held the kids more accountable, you know, getting their lifts in and, you know, doing things like that.
Right, right. Well, when you were going to the administration and ask for that those dollars, or when you were going to the administration and asking for that time during the day, outside of just simply pointing to a win like over McCauley or something like that,
right,
what was the really selling point? What could you give somebody that's in a similar state that you were in back then to go to their administration with and say, this is why it's important?
Right. Well, the thing with our administration is it's a great administration. And they allow us to coach and do what we need to do. The only thing was they wanted the kids to kind of get out earlier than what they were getting out. And I was telling myself, I'm not going to be able to do it in 3,000 square feet and get everybody worked out the way I need to get them worked out.
Right.
You know, I said, we can come in, we can do some push-ups, pull-ups, and lunges, and band rows or whatever. We can do that. I can run everybody through. But if we want to compete at a level and keep up with the Joneses, we're going to have to build a facility that will allow me to work out, you know, at least 80 kids at a time, yeah, where we can get them in, get them out. Because they like for us to be done at practice by 6 o'clock. And so when you're trying to get 300 kids lifted in 2.5 hours and 3,000 square feet, it just doesn't work. And stuff. So that was my selling point to them. Was like, I can get these kids in, I can get them out, and I can get them home the time that you're wanting them out of school to, you know, leave the campus. It's pretty cool with our boarding. We have a boarding community too, which we can kind of keep them a little bit longer if we need to. They don't have to leave campus. And, just as long as we have them at dinner by 7, they're good to go.
Right.
But that was the point in that. And then, we had to go through the whole process of getting bids on equipment and this, that, and other. And so, you know, they gave me a budget of, I think it was $2.2 million. And they said, here you go. And
right.
So that's what we did. And we came in $70,000 under budget.
That's great.
That's cool.
Well, that's always a nice little feather in your cap when you go back and say that you saved the money, right?
Yes, right. That's right.
Well, with those classes, I mean, I'm assuming that not all of them are athletes all the time, and they're definitely athletes from different sports in there at the same time.
Right.
What's kind of been the best program? How do you set it up in a way that kind of hits in-season, out-of-season athletes that train pretty much year round and compete year round? What's been the best kind of system for you?
Like this year, when we started the class, actually, we took all of our athletes, like with my football players, volleyball, soccer, and that's only three. We keep them what they've been doing all summer.
Mm-hmm.
But the new athletes that have come in here, and we started kind of, you know, some people call it ground zero or whatever. We call it Raider Ways. And stuff, and we'd take all those new athletes that have never lifted with us, and we'd kind of put them through a screening process, just see how, if they can hold a lunge, if they can hold an athletic position, if they can do a pull-up, a push-up, you know, whatever. And we'd evaluate them from that, and then we'd start them out at level one or level two of our Raider Ways program. And then we'll keep them on that we introduce them to the Olympic lifts at that point, just mainly pulling. A lot of trap bar deadlifts and that, just trying to build a core strength, especially on the level one kids.
Yeah.
And then when you go to level two, we allow them 3 weeks to stay on that level, and they can, if they show us a lot of improvement, we'll let them test out and then go to level two. But everything else, pretty much with all the other athletes, we keep them on the Olympic lifts. We just play with the volumes and the intensities, you know, if they're in season or out of season. Postseason stuff, we'll hammer them. We'll add a little bit of, you know, hypertrophy work there, and then just go off of our basic periodization of, building the strength and the power and the strength endurance and, stuff. And then we'll build, that's how we build them. So that's a, I hope that answered your question.
Yeah, no, that's great. That's great. Yeah. I think having that kind of balance and having, I think the most important part there is having a process in which they come in, they're evaluated, you start them in the base level program, and then they're able to graduate through different levels.
Right.
Smart. And then obviously, you have to utilize your coaches and the kind of self-built coaches that you have that are the seniors and juniors to help out the freshmen and sophomores. But we talked the other day, you and I, on the phone about a cool program that you've kind of been a part, that you've started, that you want to be, that you're trying to kind of grow, but basically, long story short, it was kind of, you saw some teams in need, be it, not having the same type of resources that a Baylor does or some of these college programs or whatever.
Right.
And you basically went to your football coach and you got that team some gear and some practice gear that was better than their game gear. And,
yes, sir.
And just talked about kind of growing that. I did something similar, years back where, I was getting all these t-shirts from all these NFL scouts and stuff.
Right.
And I was like, I don't need any more t-shirts, And so I'd just collect them. And then at the end of the year, I'd go and I'd donate them. I think as coaches, again, we have a bleeding heart for helping any athlete, and I knew I grew up single parent, five kids, and wasn't even able to play football until eighth grade
because
I couldn't afford it. Tell us a little bit about what you're trying to do and where you hope to take it.
Basically, like I told you the other day, it started with my son, the team, I guess it was his junior year, and we were scrimmaging team from across town, and I noticed our kids, they got on this really nice Nike practice gear. This other team were playing, they don't have belts to hold their pants up, and their pads were falling out, and stuff, and it just really kind of, I guess the good Lord put it on my heart to kind of do something for these kids. And so I went to the coach after the scrimmage, and I said, I'd really like to donate my time, give you like 4 hours a week for you to bring your kids over here. Let me work them out for you, teach them how to lift, and we'll even condition them for you. That didn't pan out. And so I kind of forgot about it. And then I was driving to work a couple of Sundays ago when it kind of hit me again. And what I thought I could do was, put a clinic together to take these coaches through, show them how to lift the kids, the proper way to lift the kids with a template that they could have, showing them how to do, to program, kind of teach them how to program. I know it's hard to do in a weekend, but, at least give them something, a guideline that they can go by and let them know that, hey, it's not good to do three sets of 12 on cleans at, whatever percent you're at, or three sets of 20 on squats at 85%.
Right.
And that's kind of the premise of it. We have a problem where everybody thinks we're recruiting or we want to recruit their kids.
Sure.
Which we don't recruit, and if we, if we did, we'd be a lot better than what we are. but, and a lot of the public schools around here, they don't have the resources to bring in, the proper equipment or coaches to do that. And so a lot of times the head coach or offensive line coach or, another coach that's there who may have a little bit of experience, they're trying to take these kids to the workout. A lot of times, they're just regurgitating what they did when they played.
Right.
And what stuff. So that was, I just like to just try to, I've always had a heart for people. Want to try to be a farmer and plant a seed and maybe hopefully one day it'll grow and you can cultivate it and see what it kind of flourishes into. But the main thing too was to kind of let these kids, at these public schools, that, may not be as blessed to be able to come to a school like Baylor or a private school in our division, that, there's somebody out there that cares about you other than the people that are around you. And there's something bigger out there that cares about you enough, to bless you with talents and stuff. And I'd just like to help them enhance those talents.
Yeah. Well, we're going to put your email in the show notes, but I think, I get cocked, I get asked probably, once a day, from young coaches that are asking, how can I speak more? How can I, put myself out there and teach in a different way? And
right.
I told Dave when we talked on the phone, that, set that date and I'm there, I'll find a way to make it, make it happen. Right. And I'll be there. Right. And I want to challenge any other strength coach that speaks regularly and does all that to do the same thing. But if you're a young coach, you know, what a great opportunity. You'll get some speaking experience, but also give back to a community. And so I would encourage you to reach out to Dave and, you know, and offer up your services and let's make this clinic happen, because I think it's going to be something that's really, really good for the community. But
that'd be awesome. Dave, I got a question for you.
Yeah, sure.
I want to know how you integrated your agility work into a Native American traditional service, like you on one of your papers you wrote in college.
That's a good question. That's absolutely a good question. What did I do with that paper? I mean, basically, I just equated the skill sets of change, multi-directional training, and related it back to, you know, in the hunting and gathering days, being able
That's
to
awesome.
Do that. But, you know, what he's referring to, I spoke about in my book, is I wrote I had two C's in college. One was in biology, which ended up being my major. You know, pissed me off, so I made it my major. And then the other one was in Native American religion traditions. And I went to a school that was founded on a Native American area. I can't even, you know, I'm not even thinking of the word, I'm, you know, territory. And and so I had to take that class, and it was a class that I just did not do well in. But I appreciate that.
Yeah.
You might be the first person to put me on the spot on that. Like,
I'm sorry,
it.
I didn't mean to do that.
No, I love it. I
just thought it was really cool how you worked it in there.
Yeah, well, you know, and so I think that's a good lesson, you know, something, and the reason why I think why I brought that up was, I think when we're in college and we're in some of these classes, and I have this conversation with my kids all the time where, you know, you write a paper, you give a presentation, you know, if you can relate it back to what you're passionate about, you know, oftentimes that gives you additional motivations to do well, and you might as well make it purposeful. You know, so if you're a strength coach and you're in a Native American religion tradition class, find a way to equate it back, and I think that's pretty powerful. I'm glad you brought that up. That's funny.
Yeah, on page 134, if you're wondering.
Oh, there you go. There you go.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. That's a great book too.
No, I appreciate that.
Great book.
Well, man, we end the show with some resources. Give me the best piece of coaching advice you ever received.
Best piece I've ever heard or seen? It comes from a quote. And it says, just because you yell loud doesn't mean you're a good leader. And that's Joe Paterno said that. And there's a lot to that, because I've seen kids that were trying to get in leadership roles as far as our team goes. They yell really loud, but they don't back it up. I'm not a big yeller. When I yell, people know that I mean business and stuff. And so, you know, I try to lead by example. You know, kids will come in here and they'll catch me working out or something. Can't lift like I used to. I'm getting older and stuff. But, you know, I still try to do something, and the kids will see me, you know, where I'm trying to, you know, if I'm asking them to do something, you know, I'm not afraid to do it myself.
Right.
And stuff. And so, you know, I tried, you know, the biggest thing is just lead by example. And, you know, just because you yell loud, it doesn't mean you're a good leader.
Yeah, I think I heard a story a while ago, some time ago, and it was, I think it was about Al Persegian, I can't remember, Notre Dame. And, you know, I think he followed up, you know, at some point, Newt Rockne, who was animated and, you know, but Persegian would bring the guys in, and he would talk really, really low. And what would naturally happen is all the athletes would kind of get closer and closer and closer,
right,
just so they could hear him, you
right.
know. And by doing that, by that body language, you're getting closer with your teammates and kind of being around each other. He felt like that would make them. So I agree with that piece of advice. I think anytime, you know, being able to manipulate that, and
right.
when you do speak loudly or you do yell, it means something.
Right.
But also, you know, you keep this kind of constant sense of calmness around you, to where you don't just fly off and have an emotional response to everything.
Right, right. Because that does lose its power.
Oh, no question. No question. Last question is a book, app, website recommendation.
Book. I recommend your book.
No, I appreciate it.
Anything by Greg Everett.
Yeah.
I like reading Greg Everett and stuff. And just I like reading Dan John as well.
Yeah.
And stuff. And then website, obviously Train Heroic. They've been really good to me. They've even allowed me to write for them a little bit, which is kind of scary. And then what was the other one? I'm sorry.
Well, app and website. So, I mean, Trent Herndon could be both an app and a website.
Right. And one more website would be Breaking Muscle.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be good.
That's a good website.
Well, like I said, man, I think in this field, there's lots of great coaches in there, and they all do a good job. I think what separates us from most is that the willingness to have that impact on a 24/7, 365 type of deal, and you embody that, man. I think the things that you're doing with the give back that you're doing, but also to turn around and pour constantly in your athletes and make the situation, make the big time where you're at. And sure. You walked into a 3,000 and now you have almost 30,000 and the whole deal. That speaks volumes when it comes back to, people that make the big time where they're at, give back to the community, and good things happen to good people. And so really appreciate you coming on the show, man.
Man, I appreciate you having me. And, I appreciate your friendship and just always being there and being available for coaches like me and guys that's been at the top level. And, I just appreciate everything you did,
too. No, thanks, buddy. Appreciate it.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey, on Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.